my goal is to try to get you guys not necessarily to hear this for the first time, but maybe to just pretend for a moment that you don't know the story that well. And so to start, I'm going to give a little bit of a history lesson. Maybe a little bit of context might help us out here. So beginning around 590 BC, you guys might be familiar with Judah and Jerusalem being destroyed by Babylon, and exiles are taken. If you guys are familiar with the story of Daniel, you have a good idea of how that went. And a little while later, King Cyrus comes into power, and he helps the exiles rebuild their temple in Jerusalem. And that brings us to about 500 BC. And this is where things start to really set the grounds, set the stage for what's going to happen around the year 0 AD. No spoilers yet. So around 500 BC, great thinkers like the Buddha, Confucius, all the Greek philosophers, and even some Jewish prophets start to speak up. They become more prominent. You right now, many of you could probably page through a few different great thinkers that come to mind. Old empires fall to new ones. So you have old empires like Assyria, Babylon, or the Medes. They fall to the new Persian Empire, which to date is the largest empire to ever be established. Iron Age tech is spreading, so there's agricultural productivity, there's populations rising, towns, cities, and civilizations grow and advance. All the while, alphabetic script has been becoming widespread. The Aramaic script is now used throughout the Middle East. And this brings us to about the year 200 BC, where Rome starts conquering lands. In about 50 BC, so just a short time before Jesus, China has been experiencing about 200 years of peace. After so much war and waging, they are at peace. All the while, Rome has been conquering the rest of the known worlds. And up to this point, they have finally conquered the Mediterranean area. And now the world is at peace, or at least the most peace that they have known for a long time. And you guys might be familiar with this guy named Octavian, he becomes Rome's first emperor, more commonly known as Augustus. And so with the newfound peace among the Middle East, we have the Silk Road opening up. Our historians in the group might know the Silk Road as one of the largest trade routes to ever be opened between China and Europe. This is a pretty big deal. It even extends south into Africa a little bit, essentially connecting the entire known world. And so the world right now is looking for a king. And it's really kind of odd. I'm reading through commentaries, and they all are saying the same thing, that the writers of the day, so whether it's Josephus, probably the biggest Jewish historian, or our Roman historians in Greece, anybody who was writing anything, whether it was poetry or novels, whatever it is, they were writing about how there was a general expectation just in the air for a king or some ruler. Somehow, everybody felt that it was time for somebody to come and essentially save the known world. And so with this newly appointed Roman king, Augustus, a lot of people actually looked to him as the savior, somebody who was appointed by God to bring peace to the world. And so this brings us to Bethlehem. And so we already talked about a week or two ago the significance of Bethlehem, otherwise known as the House of Bread, which is a very appropriate name for the hometown, or at least the place where the bread of life was born. But there's actually significance to Bethlehem outside of Jesus being born there. You see, the Jews all looked at Bethlehem as a pretty significant place. Jacob buried Rachel there. Ruth and Boaz once lived there. But most importantly, Bethlehem was the city of David. This is the place that over and over again, when David was running from Saul, when he was being persecuted, he longed for the well in Bethlehem. He wanted the fresh water that came from this well. He longed for this hometown. And everybody, at least all the Jews, knew that God's appointed one was going to come out of the city of David in Bethlehem. The Jewish scholars knew very well the prophet Micah, who said, "O Bethlehem, who are little to be among the clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to be ruler in Israel, whose origin is from old, from ancient days. Just reading that sounds like a really Christmassy passage, doesn't it? Through reading for Advent and all the stories that are surrounds it, you read through the prophets and things that they have said about Jesus, and it just seems to resonate with us. You're like, yeah, that's definitely about Jesus. Now, we have the privilege of having the gospel as written and the Apostle Paul teaching and preaching. But the prophets, all they knew was that somebody was going to come out of Bethlehem. And then, so that brings us to the beginning of Matthew chapter 2. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem, and he asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." All right, and so we've already mentioned a few times this morning who the Magi were. They were probably best known as astrologers. They weren't kings, but in fact they served kings. If you're familiar at all with Israelite priests, you can imagine the Magi essentially being what Israelite priests were to Israel. To Persia, they were the priests. They offered sacrifices. They offered advice to the kings. They were the ones in all of Persia that, second to kings, the people respected. They were generally good men looking for truth. They were philosophers. They were great thinkers. They were, priests. They were teachers. They were doctors. They were interpreters. They were pretty much everything that anybody needed in a kingdom. But as astrologers, it was their profession to watch the stars. And I think all of us have a general understanding of what astrology is like. You can watch the patterns of stars, there's constellations. Everything has its place in the sky. The stars have a track they follow. We have our calendars because of the stars in the sky. Everything can be tracked and traced through the path of the stars. And so when these Magi came, they were following just a star. But it wasn't, clearly, just wasn't any star. They've never traveled to Bethlehem for any other reason. So this was something new. They believed that they could tell the future through looking at the stars. And they're not the only ones. This was something that was all across the known world. It was pretty common knowledge that you could tell the future if you knew how the stars moved. They believed a person's destiny was determined by the star that they were born under. And so you can kind of see where this is leading. Magi see this star that seems to come out of nowhere. That clearly something's going to happen. But the Magi were able to see this because they kept watch. They saw something new happen in the sky. And any time that something different happened in the stars, because the stars did the same thing year after year, year after year. There's no change in there. All of a sudden, something new happens. To the Magi, it was as if God was reaching into his own creation and changing something. Something spectacular was going to happen. The Magi knew this because they kept watch. They were listening. They knew that God was going to tell them something. Now, these Magi weren't Jews. They were Gentiles. Remember, they served Persian kings. They didn't serve Israel. And so they, for all intents and purposes, didn't know God. They were about as Gentile as Gentile could get. They were offering sacrifices to other gods in their spare time. And so for these Gentiles to look at the sky and see that God is talking to them, and not just that, but they're going to follow that star. They were listening to God and they acted on it. And so why do we care so much about the Magi? I mean, we have the story of the shepherds. They were tending their flock. They came and they saw Jesus in the manger. And as Scott pointed out, these Magi, they were a little bit late to the party that day. They weren't there with the rest of the shepherds. We read the story, and in fact, it sure sounds like it was maybe a year or two later. And by the way, there's a good chance that it was a few more than three Magi there. And see, where is that verse here? When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed at all of Jerusalem with him. And so it would take more than three people walking through Jerusalem to stir up some problems. And so there's a good chance there is 100 or more people wandering through here, all searching for this new king. And remember, we laid the context, we set the stage here, and everybody had this feeling that something amazing was going to happen. There was going to be a new king, there was going to be this new ruler, somebody was going to come and establish peace. And some of the first people to come and worship Jesus were Gentiles. They weren't people from within the Jewish community, they weren't the priests, they weren't the kings of Israel. They were people who came from pretty far away. The Magi's appearance in the story shows us that the gospel isn't for those who are in. It's the gospel isn't for us that are sitting in these seats here. We've heard the gospel. It was for us, and it still kind of is. But that's not what the gospel is. It wouldn't do much good if every Sunday we came up here and just told you the gospel over and over again. It's a good reminder, and we need to have that, but what good is that going to do us if we're the only ones in here hearing the gospel? The first people to worship Jesus weren't kings, they weren't priests, and they weren't even Jews. They were Gentiles. They were people who didn't know God, looking for God, and they found him. So when King Herod heard this, that there was going to be a king born nearby, he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law. He asked them where the Messiah was to be born. In Bethlehem in Judea, they replied, for this is what the prophet had written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him. After they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to the country by another route. And so this is where I want us to really look and pay attention. This is something that was new to me as I was studying for this. We've got three different reactions to Jesus' birth here. I think the obvious reaction here was Herod. We had the Magi coming. All they did was ask where this boy was going to be born, and Herod's reaction was immediate paranoia. And there's something that I know I learned about this specific king here as I was studying for this. It turns out, as far as kings go, Herod was a pretty good king. There are stories of Jerusalem and the people in it becoming impoverished, and Herod reaching into his gold reserve and basically out of his own pockets buying food for his people. And for all intents and purposes, he was a great king with one flaw. He was extremely paranoid, as I assume most kings were. I mean, if you were a king in ancient days and somebody came up and asked you where the new king was going to be born, you're going to have at least a few questions about that, like Herod did. But Herod's immediate reaction was hatred and envy. And so when he heard about a new king, he did whatever he could to assure that Jesus wouldn't take his throne. But that's not exactly what he told the Magi. He told a little bit of a white lie, I suppose. He said, just as soon as you guys find out where this boy is born, come and let me know, because I want to come and worship him too. But see, Herod didn't want anything or anybody to mess up his life. He had something good going for himself, and he wanted to keep that going. But Herod didn't just react that way. He also called the priests in. And these are the Jewish priests, the ones who knew the law. They knew what the prophets said. They, for all intents and purposes, knew the Bible perfectly. So when they read that passage from Micah, when they read about how this little boy was going to be born in Bethlehem and he was going to become king, you'd think, or at least I would imagine, that these priests would be kind of excited. Finally, this prophecy that they had grown up learning, that they have probably recited hundreds of times. These magi are coming here and they're filling in these priests. They're letting these priests know that, hey, we saw, we know where this boy is going to be born here. And I'd imagine that, I'd hope that if I was in that place, I would want to join the magi in this journey. I'd want to go find the king, or at least want the magi to come back and fill me in on everything. I want to be a part of that. This is something that I grew up learning about that was promised to me and my people, and they just kind of seemed apathetic towards it. They were pretty indifferent. They read straight from the prophet Micah. They quoted the prophecy about the very child that the Magi were seeking. And if they cared at all, they would have joined the Magi. They would have done something. But instead, they just stood there, recited the prophecy, and went on their way. They took him for granted. The priests took Jesus for granted. It could have been that Magi were talking about a baby boy, and the priests were imagining some mighty king or warrior coming out of Bethlehem. We can see here that taking Jesus for granted, it wasn't the sin of the pagans that came from Persia. It wasn't the sin of people who didn't know God. Taking Jesus for granted was the sin of the people like us, who knew the Bible, who knew the prophecies, who read about this Jesus probably every day. It was a sin of priests and religious people who knew the Bible. And to be content with where we are is not okay. A lot of us, myself, we don't really want our lives to change. We're okay with the status quo. We like where things are. Maybe we don't like where things are, but we think that we have things under control, or that things are well within our reach, that things will kind of even out on their own. Things will get better. I can't be stuck like this forever. I don't know whether you are all in a place where things are going real well for you, or maybe things have been a bit of a struggle recently. But I think we can all at least say that being okay with the status quo, being okay with the way things are or where things are at, isn't enough. And so these priests were completely indifferent toward Jesus. I mean, can you imagine that the Magi are coming, talking about this child that we've been reading about all of our lives is finally born? Okay, that's cool. It just doesn't make any sense, especially when you go on to see the Magi's reaction, which was just straight up adoring worship. Remember, these are the ones who didn't know God. They offered sacrifices to other gods. All of a sudden, they see this star and they understand that God is trying to tell them something. They don't know exactly what. They don't even know who this Jesus is other than a king. They might have heard this prophecy. Clearly, they knew something. They were well-read. They probably knew a lot of what the Jewish prophets said. They didn't know who Jesus was other than a king. Jesus hadn't raised the dead. He hadn't fed 15,000 people with some bread and fish. Jesus hadn't done anything yet, nothing other than come to earth. Jesus probably couldn't even speak yet. And here, these people who didn't know God at all knew only one thing, that this boy was special, that he was going to be king. Their only reaction was adoring worship. They had the desire to lay at the feet of Jesus the noblest gifts that they could bring. They brought gifts that they believed were fit for a king. Nobody spoke to a king without bringing gold along as a gift. You talk about the frankincense and myrrh. They were basically just really expensive gifts. Frankincense was often used in the temples to burn and basically just make the temple smell good. That was a gift. That was an offering to God. Myrrh was often used for burying people. And so you could, if you wanted to, maybe imply that these gifts were prophetic in their own right. But we can't read into this too much. All we know is that these magi, these astrologers, the servants of Persian kings, came and offered the Son of God the best gifts that they knew. And so you can kind of compare the three reactions. I think it's safe to say that most of us aren't angry that Jesus was born. And that kind of leaves two reactions left. There's the reaction of the Magi, just adoring worship for who he was. They worshiped Jesus because he was God, because he was king. They didn't worship Jesus because he had done anything great for them. He hadn't fed them. He hadn't healed them. He hadn't raised anybody. He did nothing. They worshiped him because he was God. And there's the reaction of the priests, which was just total indifference. Afraid that believing or trusting something else might shake up their world a little bit. And so we have to take a look at this, and we have to wonder, what is our reaction to all of this? Each year, year after year, we hear these stories. And I don't know if there's anybody in here, myself included, that maybe start to get, not tired of it, but it's almost like as if when we're reading the passages, you can almost recite along with them. It's like communion once a month, and we hear from Corinthians over and over again. And I know I got to the point when Pastor Don was here that I could just say it right along with him. I'm sure a couple of you guys could do the same thing. And so with the Christmas story, every year we hear the exact same passages, which is by no means a bad thing. I think it's safe to say that most of us show up to Christmas services wanting to hear the Christmas story, especially Christmas Eve. You want to hear about Jesus coming to earth because it's such a wonderful story, but I think we lose some of our wonder year after year. Little by little, we start to lose some of that. And so this Christmas, whether it's today, Christmas Eve, is our reaction going to be total indifference? Are we going to be apathetic towards Jesus? Are we going to take him for granted in everything that he is and everything that he has done? Or are we just going to worship him? Not because he's done anything great for us, not because he's done anything great for anybody else, not because he's done anything other than the fact that he is God.